The structure of my talk is going to be, am I too loud? The structure of my talk is going to be as follows. I'll first describe, I'm going to pick the thread up from where Martin left off. I'll describe the two trends that are kind of disrupting the industry today, which is microservices and DevOps. This is in the software and application space. And then I'll talk about the challenges and the opportunities that we as a research community have to influence the space. And our viewpoint, IBM Research's viewpoint on how we could structure applications that are being designed for microservices, and two of the use cases, which is like content-aware routing and systematic resilience testing. Talking about microservices and DevOps. So microservices is basically like an architectural shift. You take your monolithic service, you split it up into small, fine-grained services with well-defined APIs. They talk to each other over like, you know, using simple protocols like HTTP, and they're completely, fully loosely coupled, which means they can evolve independent of each other, and as long as the API interfaces are like, you know, compatible. This is standard, like if you were to think of it as like your C++ or Java classes, that's they maintain the interfaces. You can just like, you know, change the backend implementation as you want, except this becomes more distributed. Now the key thing to note here is that all of communication happens over the network, and there's full loose coupling. The second stuff is DevOps. This is more of a cultural shift, and this is where what has happened so far is, like, you know, as Martin said earlier, instead of packaging all the updates and bug fixes so on into one giant update and then pushing it out, what people are doing is they're moving into this practice of continuous delivery, where each and every update carries the bug fixes and your, like, you know, feature improvements and so on. This is not just for your mobile apps, but this is actually happening even for server-side applications and like services that are hosted on the cloud. And one important emphasis that's being placed here is the concept of experimentation. What people do is they constantly monitor the user feedback and incorporate the user feedback back into the application, and they constantly iterate and release newer versions. Now, what happens if we combine both microservices and DevOps? What we get is a polyglot microservice application. It's a polyglot distributed application. You have like a whole bunch of language runtimes within a single application. People write the services in the languages that they are most comfortable with, like some in Go, some in Ruby, some in Python, some in Node.js, and so on. There's a ton of integration with both external services as well as, like, you know, the cloud platform services. And each of these services is managed by an individual team. They have complete autonomy over what these services do. They own the lifecycle of that service, which means they can decide to, like, you know, upgrade, like, you know, deploy newer versions, test new features, and so on. And here's the kicker. They are responsible from development, design, delivery, testing, and operations. So this is where, that's why the dev and the ops go together. These teams actually literally operate the services and maintain the services also. There is no IT and there is no ops. There's no developer separation, actually. And what this has led to is tens to hundreds of deployments a day. Like, you know, things like, it's not just for startups, I'll tell you later about that, but like literally tens to hundreds of deployments a day on the cloud, and where there are multiple versions of individual services that can coexist at the same time, as you can see in this picture. So now you might ask, like, yeah, we know all of this. And it's like, you know, Facebook, Google, LinkedIn, Yahoo, they're all doing this thing. Yes, but did you know that these guys are also doing this? These are, like, you know, your payroll is probably coming from ADP. Your 401k is probably sitting with Fidelity. Half of you are probably banking with all of these banks that are here. Retail chains, government agencies, from the US government to the UK government to local counties, and travel agencies to, and so airlines and a whole bunch of manufacturing companies and so on. They're all in this, and they all want to, like, basically, like, move away from their legacy infrastructures, where they're kind of tired of, like, delivering, the competition is kind of disrupting their space. So they want to be as agile as the competition, and in an effort to actually, like, you know, bring that agility, they're kind of restructuring the way they're delivering the software. And so with that, what kind of opportunities and challenges do we have in this space? The key things to note here are, so enterprises have decided, like, they're basically re-architecting the entire application stack. to like, you know, go with the modern language trends and the modern, like, you know, the design paradigms that have emerged. And the other important thing is there is no such thing as completely public cloud. The whole premise within the enterprise is a hybrid cloud. They still have like a large chunk of the infrastructure sitting on their, you know, inside their environment, in their like more typically called as on-prem, and offload some parts of non-sensitive computations and so on to the public cloud. This is called as a hybrid cloud environment. And within their infrastructure, they're basically rebuilding or like, you know, their infrastructure from the scratch in order to like things like PaaS platforms or things like IaaS platforms in order to support a whole slew of like, you know, service-oriented web applications. One example is Fidelity, who have just designed their own Node.js-based like PaaS platform. And these guys are still experimenting. They are willing to like, you know, take feedback from the community, and they're heavily leveraging all open source technologies. So we as a research community, this is like my background is from research. So we as a research community could actually, this is a golden opportunity to actually influence their architecture and design. All we have to do is basically like, you know, translate some of our ideas and go engage with some of these open source communities. And any ideas that go into these open source projects like Kubernetes, Marathon, Mesos, and so on and so forth, they kind of get translated and they get adopted immediately into the enterprises. And so this is one of the best chances that we have to actually get things right at the very first stage. Talking with this, there are some challenges within the microservice architecture that these enterprises are facing. So frankly, like, you know, going back to the slide about the people who are actually using these, I've actually personally interacted with a few of these things. I've worked with some of them. And it's frankly freaky scary to look at, like, you know, their infrastructures and to see how they would actually transform an old monolithic application running on a mainframe all the way down to this kind of a very nice distributed architecture, which is so fine-grained and agile. And some of the challenges that comes here is, like, you know, this, the complexity, you can't get rid of complexity. So from the monolithic application, you've just shifted the entire complexity of the application down into the network, into the orchestration of services and like in how two services are going to interact and like in how requests should be routed across different services and so on. And the other thing is the availability aspect. So given the fact that everybody is developing their own individual service in a completely independent way, if one thing goes down, failures start cascading all the way throughout your like application deployment and come like, you know, and hits the end user. If you look at some of the postmortem reports of like some of the applications that are there out there today, microservice-based applications, inevitably all of them have this kind of a cascading failure scenario that's happening. And the most important thing is that there is like a, I wouldn't call it a version sprawl, but like, you know, people tend to keep a whole lot of like multiple versions of the services still up and running concurrently, even though only one or two of them are operational. Why? Because they still like, you know, want to be able to roll back to the older version, or they want to be able to like, you know, keep things around in case, you know, something goes completely wrong or for a variety of reasons. So now with this, what are these guys doing? Like, how are they handling these challenges? There are like a variety of ad hoc designs and implementations that are available today. One option is people actually adopt open source frameworks. Like the most popular one, like, is Netflix OS stack. It kind of started this entire movement of this like microservice-based architecture. And it's, these are nice, but the problem with this is that, like, you know, these are point solutions. They fit the environment and the needs of the companies that actually develop them. So it really works well for Netflix. But if you start applying this for you know, your own company, what you are buying into is, like, you are forced to develop everything in Java, and you're forced to adopt every other piece of technology that they actually use. The same thing applies to other frameworks that are out there. So it's like, I mean, it's not like they decided they want everybody to adopt their own framework. It's just that they develop something really cool and it scales insanely well for them, and they just put it out in the open and they let people like go take it, adopt it, and or modify it to your needs. That doesn't really work for enterprises because they want, what they want is a standardized framework that they can actually use and leverage. The second option is you go with the clustering frameworks and then you shoehorn your web application into the clustering frameworks. Things like, you know, for example, Marathon and Kubernetes. These are like excellent frameworks for like, you know, if you want to run your batch jobs and so on. Lately, they've been adding facilities to support service-oriented applications. And it has been added in such a hacky way that it's like kind of like, you know, undoing everything that the SDN did and it's like, you know, pushing things, a whole bunch of routing logic and control logic down into the IP tables level. And that's not really an architecture that you would want to go into when you want a flexible application. And so what we've done, and this is our perspective of how things should be designed, is we've taken an SDN-ish approach to architecting these applications. Let's look at how a microservice application, what are the needs of a microservice application? So when you decide to shift to microservice architecture, this is a side effect of going into the microservice architecture, is it becomes a fully distributed system, which means you need to do service registration and discovery, and you need to load balance your requests across different instances of the microservice. These are like necessary tasks. This is not why you shift to microservice architecture. The second half is this is the version-aware and content-aware routing and the operation testing in production. These are the reasons that you actually shifted to the microservice architecture. Because when you actually have the ability to do version-aware routing or content-aware routing, you can do things like, you know, A/B testing where you send like, you know, a portion of request to a web page which has a red colored button, another portion of request to a web page which has a green colored button, and then see like how users are reacting to different like, you know, web UIs. This is just a lame example, but you get the idea. And then there are other things like canary deployments where you start doing a phased rollout, or red black deployments where you roll out, upgrade an entire service from version 1 to version 2 gradually, and so on. The other thing is operational testing in production. Almost every company today does testing in production. Testing does not happen in a separate environment, and then they just simply deploy. It's like you build, you deploy, and then deploy to production, and then you test in production. Things that you would want to test in production is like, is my application resilient to all the failures? Does it actually recover from failures the way you thought it would? And so with this, what we've designed is a framework called Amalgamate. The main observation is that microservices interact completely over the network. And what existing solutions lack is the ability to control the routing of like, you know, requests across different microservices. And if you think of requests like packets and microservices as like, you know, the switches on the network, all you have to do is like, if you tack in an SDN layer on top, right? If you just imagine that there's a layer 7 SDN on top of these microservices, you can very easily have a control plane that literally controls like how requests should be routed across different versions of microservices. And it can actually decide how requests should actually be like, you know, balanced across services, and like, you know, how to do load injection and fault injection and a variety of things that can be done. So the architecture that we have is as you see in the figure. The lowest layer can actually be the bare metal infrastructure, or it can actually be any container runtime that you want, Kubernetes, Marathon, Mesos, or any of your favorite environment. Sorry, the picture is a little bit too lower in the screen. Within each microservice, you have the vertical red bars are what is called as sidecars. These are like, you know, completely decoupled from the application. It's just a separate process, so which means it's independent of the language runtime and your framework. These sidecars act as switches in some sense. They basically register themselves with the service registration component, and they take care of doing all the integration like service registration, discovery, and load balancing. That's the standard part. The cool stuff comes in when they actually interact with the controller, and they have a programmable layer on top. So the controller basically pushes down rules to decide like if requests come in for like, let's say, like 5% of traffic from the US should actually go to A prime, and 20% of traffic from Europe should go to A. So it actually pushes down rules into the sidecars, and the sidecars would actually do the appropriate routing across different microservices. And with that, let me present two use cases. So these are two things that we have developed so far, and we're developing like more use cases. These are two things that we've developed based on our interaction with various customers. The first one is the version and content-aware routing. So we've developed this system called Active Deploy, which is just a code name for all the like, version and content-aware routing like frameworks that it supports. What it does is this is literally like an SDN app. Like, you know, we use a northbound API from the controller, and we build a whole bunch of applications on top. And what this app does is it lets you like control how traffic should be routed across different versions across the entire chain of microservices inside the application. You could, for example, have a rule which says, like, you know, if you're rolling out a new version of your shopping cart service, which is supporting Apple Pay, you could set up a rule which says send 10% of US traffic to the Apple Pay version of the shopping cart. this thing would set up all the routes across different microservices such that the traffic goes in accordingly. Now, routing is just one part of the game. The key part, remember when I said earlier that like there's a feedback loop involved. So one thing that like we built is something called a Canary Advisor. You can monitor metrics that come out of the applications like the request logs, like throughput, response time, errors, and so on. And you can feed them into, like, you can start doing statistical analysis by comparing the older version and the newer version, and you can automatically provide, like, do rollbacks based on, like, is the older version, is the newer version worse than the baseline, or is this, like, you know, better than the baseline? If it is worse than the baseline, you can automatically roll back to the older version. We have a paper in ISTA called Canary Advisor. You could refer to that paper for more details. The second use case is systematic resilience testing. The idea behind this is microservices, like, you know, they're like designed and born in the cloud applications. They're designed for failure, but they're not tested for failure. And this is what we observed like over and over again, like, you know, things just kept failing, but even though they had all the failure recovery patterns implemented. You could, like, I'm not sure if many of you are familiar with Netflix's Chaos Monkey. What it does is randomly goes and injects like faults through the infrastructure and kills, like, you know, VMs and or machines and services. But what it leaves, what it does not do is it requires you to actually go and like manually validate if things worked as expected, and then go and like debug and troubleshoot the application and find out what went wrong. This takes anywhere from hours to days or minutes, depending on how complex the infrastructure is. And so what we developed is like, you know, a more systematic, structured approach to failure recovery testing. You can actually express the failure scenario that you want and a set of like, you know, expectations on how you think your application is going to recover from failures. And what the system would do, this system called Gremlin, would do is it'll actually go and plant failures throughout the application deployment. And when the request pass through, it'll actually inject failures at the network layer and not on the application. It will not go crash an application, but it can actually emulate the exact same failure by like either returning error codes, delaying requests, or like resetting connections and so on. And then it gathers the logs, runs assertions, and pinpoints like, hey, you thought two services, when service A called service B, you thought it would actually time out in 5 seconds, but it is not actually happening as you expected. So it would actually expose your flaws in failure handling logic and flaws in, like, you know, and also expose conflicting failure handling policies. So this is how it works. I mean, this is just a visual representation of the entire thing. So as you can see, all we do is like we actually write a simple Python script which provides like primitives in terms of like this is the scenario that I want to have, like overload a service C, and then assert that like, you know, service A, which is way up in the chain, responds within 10 milliseconds. And what it does is it programs the sidecars to inject the failures, runs the request through, and collects the logs, runs the assertion on the logs to validate whether these assertions passed. And the cool thing about this is that, like, you know, given the fact that microservices are developed by individual teams, one of the common things that always happens is different people have different failure handling policies, and sometimes they start conflicting with each other. So, for example, if B, that calls C, has a 10-second timeout to C, and A calls B, and A has a 3-second timeout. And this is very, very common in this thing because people just develop these services independently. And guess what? It's like when you shoot a request and like if C takes like 7 seconds to respond, which could sometimes happen, A is going to time out much earlier than like, you know, what it's supposed to do. And if this keeps happening over time, it's literally going to overload C, and it's going to like, you know, cause a failure than it shouldn't. So that's about it. These are the two use cases. And this is a fully open source system. This framework is like, you know, available in the open source, and like, you know, we'd love to have like contributions and feedback from the community, and like, you know, any ideas and like how we should actually take this forward. That's about it. Thank you.
Okay, do we have any questions? Oh, can you use the mic? Thank you.
Oh, hello, I'm Namo from Virginia Tech. So I have two questions. The first question is the clarification question. So when you mentioned about the re-architecturing the existing legacy systems, do you mean that they create some wrapper outside the existing system, or they just rebuild everything?
It's Some of them are like doing a wrapper around existing systems, but most of them are basically recreating them from scratch or like reusing parts of the code base, but leveraging the modern principles of like cloud native like application development, like integrating with the cloud application, the abstraction that are provided by the cloud platform and various other features. So long answer short, yes, they're re-architecting it completely.
Okay, so my other question, like I saw your resilient testing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, are you also like focusing on some testing for the functionalities because these different components are built separately?
That's a separate research problem by itself. Yes, and you're literally asking for like how do I do an integration testing, end-to-end integration testing across these, and how do I know if this thing works? And yes, it is an open research area as it is, because you need to know what inputs to generate in order to actually traverse to the required set of microservices that you actually want to. And you also need to know what is it that you expect in output. And given the fact that these things have different like interfaces, like from the mobile, from the web, and then or just an API layer, it's still an open area and people still do it manually.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Anirvan Jayasin from AMD. So you mentioned that all of the interactions are through HTTP across the microservices.
Predominantly HTTP, predominantly. For most part, they stick with HTTP. I mean, unless they require extreme performance, in which case they go to Thrift or Google RPCs or some of these protocols. But predominantly for the bulk of them, it's HTTPS.
Okay, so you sort of partially answered my question already. So what's, in your experience, what's the fraction of things that need tighter integration than what you could provide with sort of the baseline HTTP?
What can you define tighter integration in that sense?
So how often do you see people doing something other than HTTP?
It's kind of rare, but once again, the whole idea is there's no tight integration. So to put in a simple words, like in words of Martin Fowler, it's like smart endpoints and dumb pipes. So just like Thrift and Google RPCs or protobufs and Google RPC, it's just a dump pipe that just carries the data across. So that's as far as they go. They do not actually integrate deep into any middleware and so on, because they want to keep that layer completely agnostic and simpler. So 90% of time people stick with HTTP/HTTPS. And then when they talk to databases and other things, that's probably over TCP. But that's about it, actually.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Jonathan Mace at Brown University. So microservices are pretty interesting in terms of sort of performance and failure diagnosis and that sort of thing. There are lots of new challenges. But as a researcher, I don't have a website or something like that where I don't know what a website would even contain. And as far as I'm aware, I haven't really seen anything out there in terms of like a reference implementation of an actual deployment of a microservices framework. So I guess I'm curious what do you use to actually evaluate these things, and whether you think there's room or whether you know of anything that exists, whether you have any intentions to put out something that's actually like, hey, here's some fake workloads, some fake implementations on top of our framework.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So that is exactly the same issue that we faced when we did this. So the Gremlin paper that we published at ICDCS, yes, I mean, we literally had the exact same issue. I was literally trawling GitHub for 4 months to see if there are any reference implementations out, and there weren't any at that time. This was a year ago. And so recently there are a bunch of implementations of sample microservice applications by different companies, but there is, so far there is actually no, as you put it, a benchmark. Okay, here is a fake workload, here is which kind of exercise the different aspects of the microservice application, that here's how you can actually inject load and run this test bench and you'll actually see how the system works. And now if you add your own logic, instrumentation, or your developer, other stuff, this is the overhead that you actually impose, or this is how things behave. That doesn't exist, and there is definitely room for that, actually.
What, out of curiosity, what did you end up using for the paper?
So we ended up using, so fortunately we found WordPress with a, there was a WordPress-based application which used WordPress, Elasticsearch, and other things. And and then we also, like, we ended up taking one of our own production applications that was deployed inside IBM. And fortunately, both of them had bugs, which basically made it for a nice paper. And but that said, yes, it is still lacking. And so,
Yeah. Well, then for the industry people in the room, consider this an advertisement. If you want free research on your system, then release something that looks a bit like your system, because this is a really cool area.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, thank you very much.